We're going to welcome John Harbuck to the morning show. This is, again, the morning show for Tuesday, July 14th. I'm your host, Phil Hoffman. With me in the studio is John Harbuck, who's, not sure, chief poobah of the Sandpoint Street Scramble.
Well, just the organizer.
Yeah, John, and you've been doing that for quite some time, haven't you?
I believe this will be the 11th or 12th year.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into the whole history of the Street Scramble in a moment, including where the name came from, how it got started here, what it's about. But, John, for listeners who may not be familiar with you are, man about town that you are, we have new people coming into the community all the time who don't know the pillars of the community. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself, how long you've been around Sandpoint, and just a little bit of your background and history.
Well, we've been in Sandpoint since 1979. We lived in town for about 6 years, and then in 1986, we moved up into the Selly Valley and have 35 acres there that we put into a conservation easement a year ago, so it cannot be subdivided. We've got Grouse Creek on our property, which is a good bull trout stream. And the fact that it is meant putting the conservation easement on it did not cost us anything because Avista picked up all the costs because they can count it as mitigation for their dams and whatnot.
Hmm. Interesting. So what originally brought you to Sandpoint?
We were living in Missoula in the mid-70s, and then my wife, Susan, got a teaching job out in California. We were going to go out for a year or two and then come back into this general area. And we had some friends in Missoula who had moved to Sandpoint, and they kind of gave us a pitch on it, and so here we are.
And 35 years later, here you are.
45.
45, excuse me.
Yeah.
45 years later, here you are. Yeah. So a lot of times we ask people about their Long Bridge moment, but that first time crossing over and seeing the scenery, you might have come up the other direction, though, from Highway 200. Do you remember your first visit?
I think Susan flew in from California, and so we came in probably via the Long Bridge and then spent the first night in our friend's cabin that he was building up Baldy. And I remember it being very humid that day, which was kind of different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unusual. An auspicious beginning.
Yeah. And then the 6 years we lived in town, we would not breathe the word barbecue because that would make it rain. It rained all summer, all those years. And so, you know, we had a short growing season. We could not get ripe tomatoes. We could not get ripe peppers. We couldn't even grow zucchini. Mm. And now, you know, especially with our lovely warming climate last year, we grew okra.
Yeah, things are changing on the garden scene.
Very much so.
Talk about that a lot. Julie and Julie on the first Tuesdays do the garden life and talk a lot about the changing times, temperatures, and growing patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're here today to talk about the Street Scramble. People around town who know you might know you from many organizations and connections, but I think they'll all know that you enjoy orienteering.
Yep.
And we'll get into the details of the Street Scramble and what it's about. How did it start?
Well, I've been... I started orienteering, I think, in 1993. Susan was a Girl Scout leader, and they have an orienteering badge. Mm-hmm. And she saw a notice in the Spokesman about orienteering in Spokane. And so I think it was November. We went down to Gonzaga and tromped around in our Sorrels just around the campus. And doing the beginner course, And then Susan and our daughter Kristen went off to a fabric store, and I stayed and did the more advanced course, and I've been kind of stuck on that ever since. I've always been fond of maps, and this was a way to combine hiking and map reading and whatnot.
So for the uninitiated, describe orienteering.
Orienteering is basically using a map and compass to visit a number of checkpoints on a map. And, you know, you can do it in a relaxed fashion, or you can do it competitively, i.e. whoever gets all the checkpoints or all the control points fastest wins.
Mm-hmm. And in the early days, it was just map and compass, and it still is, although with the advent of GPS, this is somewhat of a lost skill for some people, I think.
Probably. You know, the GPS and that kind of thing comes into play in making the map now. Our current club president has, this is the Eastern Washington Orienteering Club, otherwise known as EWOC, which was given its name back when Star Wars first came out. But anyway, with the maps being geo-referenced, you can be out in the field with a tablet computer and, oh, there's a boulder and it's, you know, over a meter high, let's put it on the map. Or here's a cliff or, you know, a particular feature. And it does make map making probably a little easier.
And so with the regular orienteering events, they're competitive in the sense of being timed?
Yeah, they're timed. Most orienteering events are what are called point-to-point. In other words, you have a starting point, and then you go to what's marked as control number one and number two and number three and do them all in a particular order. And for our local events, we'll have a beginner course that's, as they say, all on handrails, which are either all on trails or following a fence line or the course of a power line or some linear feature. There'll be an intermediate course that will have a little more difficult controls to find, and then an advanced course that usually stays away from trails, although, you know, it's your decision. The route you follow is your decision. So you can detour over and take a trail or a road if that is what you think makes it easier, rather than, say, going through some thick vegetation.
So it doesn't matter how you get there. It's just that you get to the certain point. So
yeah,
if you were on one side of a canyon rim and it was the place you wanted to go to was on the other side, you arguably might stay on the level, go across a bridge and come back on the level rather than going down and back up the canyon straight line.
Yeah.
In some ways, it reminds me of, and this is probably an offshoot or derivative of it, the sport of geocaching.
Well, except that that's usually not timed, is it?
Usually not timed, no. And I don't think there's a requirement. You go to more than one, although many people do, but in terms of setting about to find something and choosing a route, it probably derived from it, I'm guessing.
That might be. Yeah. You know, orienteering started in Scandinavia with, you know, bored soldiers in the winter wanting something to do. Okay. And so they kind of started out with pretty basic maps, and now maps can be very, very, very detailed. You know, a typical topo map, the scale is like 1 to 24,000, you know, several inches to the mile. Orienteering maps, when I started, it was standard to be at 1 to 15,000, and then soon became 1 to 10,000, which means that a centimeter on the map would correspond to 100 meters on the ground. But if you're, say, on a college campus or some other really detailed area, you might be working at looking at 1 to 5,000 or 1 to 4,000. So lots and lots of little detail can go onto the map. And each checkpoint is on a specific feature. You know, if it's on a college campus, you know, it could be the bottom of the stairs of some building or a tree around the corner of another building.
And then when you get there, what's at the checkpoint?
Well,
how do you know you've arrived?
Traditionally, you would see an orange and white kind of three-cornered flag, you know, about a foot by a foot in size. And there would be a little punch hanging on it with a particular pattern of pins that you would punch a card that you'd carry. And then when you finished, your card would be checked against a MasterCard to make sure that you had actually been to all of these checkpoints. Nowadays, with the advent of technology, there is electronic punching, which our club had resisted for years, mainly because the couple of people that were supposedly running it were old and traditional. But our new president has got us into electronic punching, where you have a little electronic unit at each control. You have a little computer chip that's attached to your finger that you stick in, and it beeps and it records the code and the time. And then you download afterwards, and you can tell how long it took you to get from the start to number one and to number two and all of that, and compare that with all of your friends and neighbors and dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Of course, these units are kind of expensive. The thing about the street scramble coming up next Saturday is that it dispenses with all that technology, including the fact of having the orange and white flags, because instead you have a sheet of paper with questions and a multiple choice answer that you describe what you see at that spot, anything from what's the color of the roof on the northeast corner here, or on the sculpture, how many little metal birds are there?
Right. So something visual or otherwise you have to experience to prove you were there.
And I always have one checkpoint down on the alley between first and second that is all painted up by the Sandpoint High students.
We want to get into that, but before we leave the question of technology, this sounds like something where a person who might not be as comfortable with map and compass would take a GPS and plug in the coordinates and use it to find direction. I assume that's frowned upon.
It's not allowed, and it would be, I think it would be counterproductive.
Yeah.
You know, it might be productive only if you're really lost, really have no idea where you are on the map. Otherwise, it's much quicker to just use the compass and the map and the features that are shown on the map to navigate. And you know, all the really good orienteers are running at almost full speed while they do that.
They're in it for the time.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Street Scramble. First, the details. It's coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday. Registration is from 9 a.m. to about 9:40 at the YMCA. And then at 9:45, people are given their map so they can attempt to plan their route. And then the start, it's a mass start at 10 a.m., And you have until 1 p.m. to visit as many controls as you can and accumulate as many points as possible. Now, this is different. This is not a point-to-point event like I had described before, but this uses just the regular topo map of Sandpoint and the vicinity from about Kootenai Cutoff Road, I mean the Schweitzer Cutoff Road on the north down to like where the Blue Gate is on the south. And there are 30-some checkpoints that are shown by little circles on the map, and they're each assigned a point value. And so you can do it either on foot or on a bike. Obviously, you're going to get a lot more controls if you're on a bike. Last year, for the first time ever, a couple of guys from Spokane were able to visit every single one of the controls in a little over 2.5 hours. Mm. That's never happened before.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So the goal is to get to as many as possible or accumulate as many points because some have a higher point value than others.
Yeah. Yeah. They range in point value from 20 to 100. And that's indicated by the number next to the circle. Numbers 21, 22, 23 are worth 20 points, 41, 42, 43, 40 points, etc.
Got it. So roughly 3 hours to accumulate as many points as possible, on foot or on bike. I would assume those are like two different categories for prizes.
Yeah. Well, prizes are, you know, bragging rights.
Yeah, well, yes. Okay. And registration day of, do folks need to do anything in advance to sign up?
In the past, I've asked people to contact me either by phone or email so I'll know how many maps to print. But our club president says, I'll just print off about 30 of them, so we'll have plenty.
Okay.
So I guess it's not necessary. Okay. Well, although if there were a tremendous outpouring of support due to this fine program here,
you might get the morning show bump. Do you want to give out your contact information, John? Or
sure. You can call me on our landline because my cell phone is almost always off. 208-263-9894. And, you know, leave a message if we're not there to pick it up. Otherwise, you can email me at Wesley Harbuck, WESLEYHARBUCK 4964 at gmail.com.
Okay.
4964 is really easy to understand if you're into arithmetic because it's 7 squared, 8 squared.
Oh, there we go. And the starting point or the gathering points at the YMCA?
Is it the YMCA? Yeah, just in the front entrance way.
And so how did this is year 11. How did it get started?
Well, there's a orienteer in Seattle, Eric Bone, who has a company called Meridian Geographics or Mergeo. And he started doing a street scramble and actually trademarked the name, back, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And so with his permission, we used the name for the Sandpoint Street Scramble. And his was around Seattle, and I think it was longer duration, and occasionally it could involve a ferry ride across, like, to Bremerton.
Okay, that would probably be for major points.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it sounds like, from your description of 30 maybe being a high end, are those individuals or teams or both?
Well, in the past, it seems like max we've had 15 or 20 teams or something like that. Sometimes they're on bikes, sometimes they're on foot. Randy says that if Deb goes, that they'll be on foot.
That's probably true. And so two people teams?
As many
as you want.
As you want. You know, there are family teams and there are, you know, hardcore competitive teams.
And so the idea with the team is the individuals go to each point together or do they divide and conquer?
You do it together.
Okay. Yeah. So there's no point in trying to get together six people to go to each two.
Correct.
One-fifth of the locations. Okay.
Because you only get one sheet of paper record your answers on.
Ah.
This is sort of, there's a type of orienteering called roganing or score meets, which is where you have a set amount of time and scattered controls. And they were, whereas orienteering was kind of developed in Norway, Sweden area, roganing was developed in Australia. When I had first heard of it, I had heard that it was an acronym for rugged outdoor group activity involving navigation and endurance.
Oh.
But it turns out it's actually from the names of the three guys, I think Roger, Gale, and Ned, who came up with it. And these are often, they can be the guy in Seattle who started the Street Scramble puts on several of these in the late spring. Usually you can do a 2 hour, a 4 hour, or an 8 hour. But, you know, the real Rogaine are 24-hour events.
Oh, wow.
That run from noon Saturday to noon Sunday.
And the goal with those is to...
Again, as many points as you can.
Possible. When I first heard you use that term years ago, I just assumed that the categories were limited to old guys that were coloring their hair.
Correct.
Rogaining. I like the anacronym, though. The story about how the names came together from the founders might be more plausible. But orienteering got started in Scandinavia in the winter. Weren't they challenged by lack of daylight?
Well,
and total.
They probably had headlamps.
Yeah,
because they wouldn't have had very much daylight.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah, not much differential in the features with the complete whiteness, I would think. So that would be a real challenge.
And I don't recall specifically whether it started on skis, but there is certainly a ski orienteering community, and there is mountain bike orienteering, although it doesn't happen that often. And there's what's called, the name doesn't come to me right now, but orienteering for disabled people, where people stay on like a road or a trail and they stop at a particular viewpoint. You know, look out into the landscape, you know, maybe 50 meters away, and there are four or five flags placed on different things. And, you know, you look at your map and see where the control circle is, and you decide which of those flags is the correct one. And then you move on to the next viewing site and do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That way, people who are, say, in a wheelchair can do it.
Yeah, even if they're mobility challenged, they can use the map and compass skills.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So the closest orienteering club is the Eastern Washington chapter.
And actually almost equidistant for me is Kootenai Orienteering Club in Cranbrook, Kimberley, BC.
Yeah, I was going to ask what other ones are nearby, but
And the Kootenai Orienteering Club was really active this spring, they had a bunch of Thursday afternoon events that I've been up to a couple of times. And they'll, you know, last year they hosted the Western Canadian Championships, and, you know, they've got, well, Kimberley Cranbrook is where Canadian orienteers from Vancouver and Calgary go to retire because there's a ski area there, you know, sure. And it's pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. So if someone comes to the street scramble, or if they can't make it and they want to do something like that, are there other street scrambles nearby?
No. You know, and typically orienteering is not done that much in the summer just because of, you know, thick vegetation and heat.
Mm-hmm.
Our particular club will not have any events until September, one in the Dishman Hills, if the map gets finished. And then our big event is always the Vampire Orienteering, which is at night at Manitou Park in October.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our website has events and results and things, and it's, again, we're Eastern Washington Orienteering Club, mm-hmm. ewok.org.
And so how did it get its name Vampire?
Because one person carries a red light. It's a Scoro format where it's a mass start and everybody goes out in the dark with headlamps and a map to try to find as many checkpoints. And if the vampire catches them, then the vampire takes your your card and gets all the controls that you have, and you become a vampire. So it usually gets quite a few people.
And then you try to go capture someone else's.
Exactly, exactly.
And then, so they start up in the fall, they go on through the winter?
We used to have events in the winter, not so much anymore. Usually our first event will be in, say, March at Manitou Park in Spokane. We just finished a rather major event in June, the Pacific Northwest Orienteering Festival, otherwise known as PNWOF,
mm-hmm.
that we partnered with Cascade Orienteering in Seattle. They put on 3 days of orienteering at Quincy Lakes in the Scablands, sand dunes at Moses Lake, and then Fisk State Park outside of Spokane. And then our club put on an event at Palisades Park in Spokane, and then a relay at Eastern Washington University in Cheney, and then another point-to-point event at Cheney Wetlands. Mm-hmm. And then on the weekend, Mount Hood Club put on a 2 days of events mm-hmm. In Oregon.
And so I assume the Eastern Washington Orienteering Club's how to participate, sign up, become involved online somewhere?
Yeah, yeah. You know, visit the website and it tells you what events are coming mm-hmm. up and something about them mm-hmm. and how to get there and whatnot.
And experience ranges, newcomers would be welcome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We always have a beginner course available that, again, is all on trails and fairly easy navigation.
And for Saturday, it sounds like someone with very limited experience could show up, be given the instructions, and they have some working knowledge of Sandpoint, figure out how to get from point A to point B.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and the topo map that we use has streets named.
Okay.
Many of the streets named. And it's just a matter of navigating around the streets. And like I say, we go up to the Schweitzer Cutoff Road. So we're, you know, maybe up the Pine Street Hill, up the Pinecrest Cemetery. Last year, I believe, one of the checkpoints was shown on the map, and it was Pat McManus's gravestone.
Oh.
And what year did Pat McManus die? As many of you around here know, Pat McManus was a rather famous local author that wrote various humorous outdoor stories.
Yeah, that's interesting. You get to participate in the fun outdoor activity, gain a little knowledge, perhaps get some exercise in. Open for all ages?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So just one more time for those who might have tuned in a little late or didn't write it down. Details for this coming Saturday's Street Scramble. Street Scramble.
Registration is between 9 and 9:40 at the Y. We do charge to cover the cost of our maps. $8 for EWOC members and $10 for non-members. A team, if you know, would be $10. And if you want each team member to have a map, that's an extra $2 per map. So, you know,
yeah,
fairly
reasonable.
Cheap nowadays.
Yeah. And so why at 9 to 9:40 for registration, 9:45, get the maps?
10 to 1.
And it ends at the Y also.
And ends at the Y. And if you're overtime, there's, of course, a point penalty.
Oh,
usually
yes.
10 or 20 points per part of a minute that you're overtime.
Well, yeah, you don't want to be overtime.
No.
And what happens if you come in early? You don't gain points.
You don't gain points, but if your score is tied with someone else, then whoever is fastest again wins.
Okay. So speed will help if you've accumulated enough points for it to matter.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Well, John, anything else you'd like to talk about Saturday or orienteering or otherwise?
Well, huckleberries are good this year.
You're not going to divulge any secret favorite spots, though, are you?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Although Ed Robinson and I have done well this year.
Well, good. Good. It's good to know. I've heard that they're out there and ripe already, although it still seems early. It's only mid-July.
Well, you know, there's a place we go in late June that they're usually ready.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something you can easily drive to.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a little bit of walking.
Ultimate orienteering challenge.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to KRFY's morning show. I'm your host this morning, Phil Huff. With me has been John Harbuck, who's the chief organizer for the Sandpoint Street Scramble, the 11th annual, coming up this Saturday at 9 a.m. As always, if you missed any of the podcast or simply want to listen to it, a show, you can listen to it again as a podcast. It will be up later today on KRFY.org. And our morning shows now replay in the afternoons at 2 p.m., so you can tune in then to 88.5 FM. Thank you for coming on the show this morning, John.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah.